Today's reading is the story of the blind man and the elephant, a story many of you may already be familiar with. There are a number of different versions, but it originally came from India and is a folk tale, and it's typically used to demonstrate how different people can have distinctly different perceptions of the same thing, especially when they have preconceived ideas. And that is something we are certainly seeing in the world today. So here's the story. And this is the version from a Peace Corps lesson, which I just done a few minor tweaks to. Long ago, six old men lived in a village in India. Each was born blind. The other villagers loved the old men and kept them away from harm. Since the blind men could not see the world for themselves, they had to imagine many of its wonders. They listened carefully to the stories told by travelers to learn what they could about life outside the village. The men were curious about many of the stories they heard, but they were most curious about elephants. They were told that elephants could trample forests, carry huge burdens, and frighten young and old with their loud trumpet calls. But they also knew that the Raja's daughter rode an elephant when she traveled in her father's kingdom. Would the Raja let his daughter get near such a dangerous creature? The old men argued day and night. One said, an elephant must be a powerful giant. He had heard stories about elephants being used to clear forests and build roads. No, you must be wrong, argued the second blind man. An elephant must be graceful and gentle if a princess is to ride on its back. You're wrong. I have heard that an elephant can pierce a man's heart with its terrible horn, said the third blind man. Please, said the fourth blind man, you're all mistaken. An elephant is nothing more than a large sort of cow. You know how people exaggerate. I am sure that an elephant is something magical, said the fifth blind man. That would explain why the Raja's daughter can travel safely throughout the kingdom. I don't believe elephants exist at all, declared the sixth blind man. I think we are the victims of a cruel joke. Finally, the villagers grew tired of all the arguments, and they arranged for the curious men to visit the palace of the Raja to learn about the truth about elephants. When the blind men reached the palace, they were greeted by an old friend from their village who worked as a gardener on the palace grounds. Their friend led them to the courtyard. There stood an elephant. The blind men stepped forward to touch the creature that was the subject of so many arguments. The first blind man reached out and touched the side of the huge animal. An elephant is smooth and solid like a wall, he declared. It must be very powerful. The second blind man put his hand on the elephant's limber trunk. An elephant is like a giant snake, he announced. The third blind man felt the elephant's pointed tusk. I was right, he decided. This creature is as sharp and deadly as a spear. The fourth blind man touched one of the elephant's four legs. What we have here, he said, is an extremely large cow. The fifth blind man felt the elephant's giant ear. I believe an elephant is like a huge fan, or maybe a magic carpet that can fly over mountains and treetops, he said. The sixth blind man gave a tug on the elephant's coarse tail. Why, this is nothing more than a piece of old rope. Dangerous indeed, he scoffed. The gardener led his friends to the shade of a tree. Sit here and rest for the long journey home, he said. I will bring you some water to drink. While they waited, the six blind men talked about the elephant. An elephant is like a wall, said the first blind man. Surely we can finally agree on that. A wall? An elephant is a giant snake, answered the second blind man. It's a spear, I tell you, insisted the third man. I'm certain it's a giant cow, said the fourth blind man. Magic carpet, there's no doubt, said the fifth blind man. Don't you see, pleaded the sixth blind man? Someone used a rope to trick us. Their argument continued and their shouts grew louder and louder. Soon the Raja, awakened from his nap by the noisy argument, came into the garden where they were arguing. Stop arguing, he said in a commanding voice. How can each of you be so certain you are right, he asked. The six blind men considered the question. And then, knowing the Raja to be a very wise man, they decided to say nothing at all. The elephant is a very large animal, said the Raja kindly. Each man touched only one part. Perhaps if you put the parts together, you will see the truth. Now let me finish my nap in peace. When their friend returned to the garden with the cool water, the six men rested quietly in the shade, thinking about the Raja's advice. "He is right," said the first blind man. "To learn the truth, we must put all the parts together. Let's discuss this on the journey home." The obvious message in this story is that we each have a limited experience and perspective of life, which thus creates our version of how we see life and what is real. Not surprisingly, it was one of the stories read to us during the interfaith seminary program I attended, as it is a great example of an interfaith approach to promote tolerance of others in both a religious and non-religious setting. Yet I believe this story can also relate to the question of faith and our search for truth and meaning, what I refer to as intra-faith. I will be expounding on this idea later on in my sermon. So today's sermon is on faith and the search for truth and meaning. And while I have stood on this dais before and spoken to you, it has never been in my capacity as a clergy person. And so to be here before you now as an ordained interfaith minister is definitely a new, scary, but exciting experience. As some of you know, I recently became an ordained interfaith minister after attending a 2-year interfaith seminary program in New York City. Therefore, when I was asked to provide the sermon at today's service, I knew I had to say yes. I am grateful for this opportunity and can think of no better place to give my first official sermon than here in this church and to the congregation of which I am a member. As I was given complete freedom to choose the topic for today's service, and since I thought some of you might be interested in what an interfaith minister is, it naturally led me to the topic of faith itself. While the word faith is often understood in what we would call religious terms, and often in regard to a belief in God, we will be looking at faith from a much broader perspective today. We're going to explore what faith is, how it relates to the fourth UU principle, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, where faith comes from, and what you personally may have faith in. And we will tie in the story of the blind men and the elephant as we go along. I'll also share with you some information about the interfaith seminary I attended, what an interfaith minister is, and some of my own experience at seminary. If time permits, we'll do a quick meditation together, and then we'll wrap up. And given what time it is already, it's going to have to be a very quick meditation. So let's start with the definition of the word faith as offered in the Merriam-Webster Online Dictionary. It's actually quite an interesting word, as it can be used as both a noun and a verb, and can be understood in both religious and non-religious terms. As a noun, it typically refers to complete trust in someone or something, a belief in the traditional doctrines of a specific religion, or a belief and trust in God, often with no evidentiary proof to support the trust required. As a verb, it requires you to put your faith or trust into someone or something. For example, I have faith that I'm going to win the lottery, or I have faith that my spirit continues after my physical body dies. These are generally the definitions we associate with the word faith, and while I did a Google search to find other definitions, almost everything that came up was Christian-related with a focus on faith in God. Yet, I did discover a very different definition in an article entitled Faith, Spirituality, Belief, Religion. What's the difference? The article is written by Dr. Gregory Kopak, a Christian writer, yet he offers a concept of faith which can be understood and considered even by those who do not believe in a God or divine presence and who do not identify as religious or even spiritual. Given my audience today, I thought this was a more fitting definition to use. Here's what he has to say about faith. Quote, "Most of us think of faith in supernatural terms, as in faith in God. This is actually more of what psychologists of religion would call belief. Faith, from a more naturalistic, psychological perspective, is merely the innate drive to search for meaning, purpose, and significance." End quote. Let me repeat that. Faith is the innate drive to search for meaning, purpose, and significance. Sound familiar? It should, as it mirrors the fourth principle of Unitarian Universalism, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Dr. Kopak believes that, quote, "Everyone has the gift of faith, but some people have exercised this innate gift more than others, allowing their faith to be better defined than others," end quote. For Dr. Kopak, then, it's not a question of whether or not you have faith, but rather how much you have exercised your faith. And I would add, with what intentionality you have practiced it. I believe that here at the Unitarian of Sharon, if we use Dr. Kopak's definition of faith, we place great emphasis on it. We are not only given the opportunity to explore our own faith in our own way without being attached to any specific dogma, we are encouraged to do so and to welcome different perspectives. This is precisely what drew me to the Unitarian Church of Sharon, and from the beginning, I actually felt like I belonged to an interfaith congregation, open to all faiths and beliefs. Similarly, to my interfaith seminary program, here at the Unitarian Church of Sharon, we have people from all different religious, spiritual, and professional backgrounds. The main difference, in my view, is that at the interfaith seminary program, we were there to not only exercise our innate gift of faith, using Dr. Kopack's words, but to do so with great intention and devotion, exploring, determining, and discerning where our faith truly lay and what our purpose was. We were there because we wanted to have the freedom to go beyond traditional boundaries. The first year of seminary was devoted to studying many of the major religions: Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, Judaism, Protestantism, and some indigenous religions, as well as a philosophy called interspirituality. This gave us an opportunity to creatively mix aspects from different religions and faiths, if we so chose, and develop a practice and a faith that really met our individual needs. Now I just lost my place. Okay. Granted, our studies of different religious and spiritual paths were limited, but it was enough to give us a taste of what they offered and an invitation to delve further if we were interested. As I said, the class consisted of people from various professional, religious, and spiritual backgrounds. There were educators, a number of people from business backgrounds, some self-employed, and there were many students with healing backgrounds, such as therapists and Reiki practitioners. As for religious background, a few were already ordained clergy from specific religions, and there were even some who were proclaimed atheists. One of the most profound moments for me during the program was when and how Reverend Diane Burke, the founder, developer, and facilitator of the program, addressed a student who identified herself as an atheist. Diane's response was this, something like this anyway. "The God I believe in is the same God you don't believe in." Diane offered no resistance or proselytizing to the student. She merely offered an invitation for contemplation and a space in which to explore other possibilities. It was amazing to watch how that student transformed over the 2 years, and by the end had come to believe, or perhaps more correctly, had reconnected with her belief in a divine presence. I share this observation with you not because I believe atheism, agnosticism, humanism, or any other ism is wrong. The whole message of Interfaith Seminary, as I've already stated, and which was demonstrated in part through the story of the blind man and the elephant, is that all perspectives come from an individual's own experience and should be honored and respected. In fact, I make this observation to emphasize that interfaith ministry acknowledges that we are each entitled to our own experience and beliefs, and that we are to respect and honor each person's path to find truth and meaning in their life. Interfaith Seminary fostered an understanding that all religions are spiritual paths when not used to foster violence or separation, and can be passed to those deep truths with a capital T. We were taught and could see for ourselves through sacred text and history that while the focus of the various religions may be different, they are all based on similar guiding principles of love, connection, and purpose. And within each religion are examples of men and women who live their lives in accordance with these principles. It is precisely because of the openness and space allowed at Interfaith Seminary that this student was free to explore different paths, change her beliefs, and put her faith where she found the most meaning. There was never any pressure to believe in one specific path or even to believe in a God at all. The program allowed her to choose a new path, which began to more closely resonate with what she now believed to be true. And for those who were not comfortable with the word God when it did appear, Diane reminded us that we could always replace the word God with the word love, because that was really what it was all about and is all about: love, respect, acceptance, and compassion for each individual. Interfaith Seminary was truly a place to acknowledge the gifts of interfaith and the connectedness between faiths, as well as intrafaith, an inner exploration of faith. As an interfaith minister, we accept all religions and spiritual practices as paths to truth and meaning, recognize the similarity of the guiding principles at the core of each of them, and offer support to others in discovering the path which resonates most deeply for them. The question still remains, where does faith come from? To address that question, I want to go back to the story of the blind men and the elephant. Notice that in the story as written, the blind men were told of the existence of an animal called an elephant, and they believed it. The issue was not whether the elephant existed or not, it was about which part of the elephant they had personally experienced. But let's push this a bit further. What if there was a disagreement about what the animal was named? What if there was even disagreement about whether the animal actually existed? Without the ability to see for themselves, how could these blind men put faith in such a thing as an elephant? Of course, this is a substitute for the real question I want to ask. How do we know something is true when we can't see it or feel it, when we are like the blind men in the story? It is true that we can develop faith in something or someone based on our repeated experiences with that thing or person. For example, I can have faith that my dog will always come to me when I call him, or I can have faith that my spouse will be there to support me when I am feeling sad. But how do we have faith in something for which we have no prior experience or no conclusive proof? How do we answer the deep questions of life and have faith in our answers when there are conflicting explanations given and when we can't know the truth through our own physical senses of sight, touch, hearing, taste, and smell? When whatever proof there may be is inconclusive, how do we determine our answers to questions like, where do we come from? Is there a God? What happens after we die? I believe that real, deep, and true faith is a knowing, a seeing, if you will, that comes from within, from our wise and loving heart, and not from our head. Faith isn't about using our physical senses to prove something true or not. It's about somehow just knowing that something feels right or is true. And I believe there are certain emotions and feelings we experience when faith is present. Experiences of joy, expansion, aliveness, connection, and purpose. With the kids this morning, I refer to it as feeling a glow in your heart. It's not, I'll believe it when I see it. Rather, it's, even though I can't see it, I believe it. Even when it doesn't make sense, I still believe it. I can sincerely say that it was never on my radar to become an interfaith minister. I believe that it was my heart that led me to this program and faith that convinced me I should enroll. The only reason I even discovered the program in the first place was because I wanted to register for a course given by a teacher I had been working with. In order to register, I had to go to the One Spirit Learning Alliance website, and once I was on the page, I noticed the two-year certification programs they offered, one on Interfaith Seminary and the other Spiritual Counseling. My first response was just this knowing that I was meant to enroll in one of them, that it was going to be a part of my journey of spiritual growth, and thus a step on the path to the fourth UU principle of a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. I was experiencing many of the feelings I noted above, feelings of joy, expansion, aliveness, and purpose. But fear and anxiety quickly kicked in. Fortunately, they were overwhelmed by the other feelings. And as crazy as it seemed, I was receiving a clear message from my wise and loving heart that this was something I was meant to do. I can honestly say that enrolling in the program was an act of faith. And here's another important aspect about faith. In preparing for these services today, I gained clarity around the belief that we can still have faith even when it doesn't always feel present, even when it seems to have disappeared. I realized that faith doesn't mean you will never have doubts, even in those things you strongly believe in. As I said, even though I had faith in my decision to enroll in the Interfaith Seminary program, there was still some anxiety about it. It's not uncommon for doubt to start creeping in, sometimes even seconds after your first experience of faith. It's not unusual to feel like you are losing faith in something or someone that you once had faith in, or to feel that faith has disappeared completely. Yet, while it may seem that faith is gone, I believe it never actually leaves. It keeps calling us back, despite the doubts, despite the anxiety, despite the fears. It just waits quietly and steadily as we move through all those doubts, fears, and anxieties, whispering to us and waiting until we feel its presence again, no matter how long it takes. What to do when these doubts and fears arise is a subject for another day. Yet, I would encourage you to explore the cause of these doubts and fears as honestly as possible. What's the actual message? Is your heart now telling you to take a different path, or are you just reacting to something that is uncomfortable? Not only did my doubts and fears about enrolling in seminary present themselves at the time of enrollment, they popped up all through the 2 years of seminary, and there were a couple of times I came close to quitting. The whole idea of becoming a minister actually seemed absurd. Who was I to think that I could be a minister? Did I really want the responsibilities and challenges I perceived came with that title? When I honestly examined my doubts, I knew it wasn't that my heart had changed its message to me. It was that feelings of unworthiness and incapacity were arising. And every time, even if not immediately, I always felt faith calling me back and telling me I was on the right path. So now the question for you is, what do you have faith in? This is always an important question, but in these extremely divisive times in our country, it seems more important than ever. Whatever your political views, it is clear that since the 2016 presidential election, emotions have been running high, and the fear, anger, sadness, and partisanship in this country is palpable. This last week, with the often gut-wrenching events during the Supreme Court nomination hearings, I have had serious doubts in our potential to come together as a nation. Whatever faith I had that we could unite as a country seemed to grow dimmer and dimmer. It's easy to become pessimistic or angry or hopeless. I know I have found myself in these states, sometimes screaming at the television while I watch the news, disbelieving what I'm seeing and wondering how this has become the world we live in. There are times that I find it hard to tear myself away from the news, hoping that this is not the reality we are living in, waiting for some miracle to happen that will transform the current toxic environment we find ourselves in. And yet, I know it is vital to do so, to take a break from the bombardment of disturbing news I watch on TV or read on my iPhone. Now, more than ever, it's crucial that we devote some time to quiet contemplation, to search for truth and meaning in the world and in our own lives, to connect with the truth and wisdom of our heart, and to discover where our faith lies. While this quiet time doesn't make the problems go away, it can help us respond to the challenges we face with greater clarity, strength, wisdom, and faith. When I take time to enter into this quiet space through meditation, chanting, or reading the words of great and wise men and women who have inspired us to become the full potential of who we can be, then I find it so much easier to connect with my heart. It is there that I discover that my faith in the basic human goodness of people is still there. My faith that someday, not in my lifetime perhaps, but someday, we can be united not only as a country but as a world. I find faith that we can live in a global community of true interfaith where we have learned to communicate without venom, anger, and disrespect, and instead speak with love, compassion, and understanding, able to see the wholeness and beauty of each individual. I encourage you to take some quiet time for yourself, to connect with your heart, and discover what you have faith in.